All right, I guess everybody who's going to be here is here, and if not, they'll come drifting in. Thank you for coming, folks. This next session is simply called Artists and Repertoire Jazz. So I wonder why they asked me to do this. Anyway, we got three really good speakers here, and I'm going to introduce the first one right now. His name is Mr. David Jessup. And he will be talking about From Discards to Discography, an independent perspective on Benny Goodman's career. Mr. Jessup is a private collector and has been since the age of 9 or so. He was a radio engineer and host in high school and college, which was actually his excuse for collecting records, so he told me. in college, he was the first student archivist at Ithaca College from 1878 to 1881, and he worked at the Rod Serling. Why is that funny? He worked at the Rod Serling Archives. Okay. Since 1982, he's been a retail bookseller, and he's currently manager of Worldwide News, which is two blocks up the street. Let's have a nice round of applause for David Jessup.
Good morning, and thank you for coming by. We'll start off, we'll sort of bridge from our plenary session, and if we can have cut number one. That is a cut that Russ Conner knew about but never cataloged because the quality was so poor. It's an in-the-audience recording that someone smuggled in, a reel-to-reel tape recorder, at the Eastman Theater, July 27th, 1974, and a tune that you just couldn't get away from in 1974. And I wasn't the one who did that. Another fellow very graciously allowed me to present it to you today. But that bridges off our local interest section. I don't know quite how or why I got interested in the big bands. It may have been just the way the music hit me. Around age 9, 10 or so, I saw the Glenn Miller story and the music was interesting. And at one point, I saw an ad for a record sale at Faye's Drugstore, a long gone chain now. The stuff was at $2.98. I could afford $2.98. Couldn't afford $5.99, which is what the best of Glenn Miller was going for at that time. But $2.98 I could do, so I went over and said, okay, I want this. That wasn't part of the sale. So $2.98 burning a hole in my pocket. I got this, the Together Again, Benny Goodman original quartet, their reunion in 1963. By 1970, it was on the cutout bins, and I didn't know what a cutout was. And as a matter of fact, this particular copy, I think RCA was really trying to get rid of because, playing Vanna White here, there's a cutout notch here, a cutout notch here, and a cutout notch here. That was the last go around for that poor puppy. And that's where it started for me. Through high school, into college, as Mr. Pelote said, I was host of a radio show, an engineer, had an FCC third class license, all that good stuff. And I used that as an excuse for record collecting. later on, about 1988, of course, Russ Conner put out his final complete book on Benny's career, Listen to His Legacy. And at that point, I wrote him. We exchanged correspondence. There were some things I had questions about, some things he queried me about. By 1993 or thereabouts, he was working on his supplement, Wrapping It Up. And along the way, I asked him if he wanted a proofreader. He said, yeah. I asked him, next exchange of letters, did you want me to send the proofs back to you, or do you want me to keep them? How do you want to do this? You keep those. I want you to do the next book. After I picked myself up from the couch, I said, okay, dependent on certain conditions like the limits of my collection, being able to ask you questions, so on and so forth. And it went on from there. It took me about 14 years to compile enough information to put together my own book, Benny Goodman, a supplemental discography, published in 2010 by Scarecrow Press, the same house that did the other two books. I've already found things that are not quite right in that book. Further knowledge has come up. This past Sunday morning, I got an email from someone who said, by the way, this appearance did happen, etc., etc. So on it goes. There'll be something in the future, I'm sure. But what we'll listen to today are some things that Russ Conner may have known about but couldn't write about firsthand. He didn't have the material, or there were some things that were new to him, details unknown. So let's take cut number two. A lot of Benny's early work as a sideman was with the Ben Selvin Orchestra, and that's Ben Selvin in a rumba mode, and I think Goodman had sort of the section lead in the clarinet. That's as much as you'll find of it. That's a non-vocal version. The vocal, I think, was by Paul Small on the U.S. issue. This is one that went out to South America, and as far as I know, Russ never found an original 78 of it. I turned up a test pressing of it, and that's what you just heard. Selvin's band was the studio band all over the place. They were doing a radio series called the Blue Coal Minstrels. It was for syndication. Russ didn't know what media it was on originally, at least according to the notes that I've read that are posted at the Institute of Jazz Studies. I know from personal experience that they are 16-inch shellac discs, center start, and we've got a couple selections from those. Cut number three, please.
Coal Orchestra now plays for your approval, Bend Down Sister.
And as an instrumentalist with Ben Pollock, with Ben Selvin, doing freelance work with other bands, Benny had to double up on instruments. So cut four, if you please. The Sideman era is a source of endless fascination for me. The music is all over the map, and there's still stuff out there to be discovered, I'm sure. I'm just having so much fun listening for that stuff. And it's so tough to get a hold of. The original 78s are collector's items. They sold like, you know, 5 copies, and you can't find them. But jumping on now to the famous Victor Band, one of the projects that got shunted my way was a CD reissue of the Congress Hotel broadcast, late 1935, early 1936. They're still in print, available on Circle CDs. And I had a ball doing the research and writing the liner notes for those. They derive from a set of tapes that Alan Roberts made for Russ Connor, if I remember right. Nobody quite knows where the original discs are. To the best of my knowledge, the discs that Robert Thompson had were 12-inch aluminum discs. I don't know whether they're direct line checks, whether they were cut off the air, but they're good quality. And I've heard some transfers that are supposedly direct from them. Russ's tapes, I'm pretty well convinced, were dubs from the LP masters that went out to Sunbeam Records, and subsequently, you know, we have them on CD. I think the transfers are as good as could be done off those, but there is some material missing. Russ Connor had mentioned parenthetically that Earl Baker, who was a trumpet player with Benny in the Pollock Band, 10 years later, he was experimenting with a disc recorder, and the quality, quote, was too poor to merit detailing or even matching against previously known material. What it turned out to be, Earl's disc, I guess, was an RCA pre-groove disc, which those who are engineers here know that you need to pretty much use a roofing nail, as someone put it, to play them. A really, really wide stylus in order to get any kind of sound out of them. And cut 5 will show us what kind of sound we were able to get.
Cut 5, please.
We found that there were some tunes missing from some of the so-called complete broadcasts, and that was one of them. February 3rd, 1936, Alexander's Ragtime Band was played, and the disc from Robert Thompson's collection didn't have it, but Earl Baker's disc had a portion of it. So there's a little snippet that's restored. There's a marvelous thing. I'm going to skip a cut or so. The rest of the disc from Earl Baker apparently came from a February 6th, 1936 broadcast, which wasn't otherwise known to exist at all. And there have been stories about Goodman being a credit hog and asking for things that some people might have not felt due. This is an interesting cut to listen to refute that. Cut 7, if you would, please.
Thank you. mentioned that Benny Goodman called me aside for a little heart-to-heart talk, and he wants it distinctly understood that more than half of that number was written by Edgar Sampson of Chick Webb's office.
That he called the announcer aside and told him, give Edgar Sampson credit for at least half that arrangement. That's a very nice thing. At the time I wrote those notes for the Circle CDs, this 1997-98, the internet was still sort of a new territory for me, and there's a lot of resources now that were not available then. What I had available for information was the New York Times on microfilm, and I went down and looked and saw what was networked out to New York. What I've learned in the past couple years is that Goodman was broadcasting daily in Chicago, and about once a week they got piped out to New York. But it just astounded me to look at the daily listings and see Benny Goodman, 11 o'clock, Benny Goodman, 11:15, day after day after day after day. And as a collector, one of your holy grails, I suppose, would be finding a studio recording that hadn't been documented before. And a few years back, on one internet discussion group, a gentleman put out the query, I have these records, they're slightly larger than normal 78s, they're white labels, handwritten labels, and one of them is Goodman Orchestra, A Little Kiss at Twilight, and had the record's catalog number on it. I wrote back to him and got further details, and he was kind enough to send me an MP3 file. And he wrote me what was inscribed on the periphery of the disc, da-da-da-da-da, BS-026-517-3. This was a tune that had take two out and take four out, but three wasn't known to exist, at least not outside of RCA, BMG, Sony. I said, could you send me a transfer of that? He did, and eventually, it went to other hands, but along the way, I was privileged to be able to take a transfer of it, and that would be a little bit of cut eight, if you would please. Goodman's position on alternate takes was, you know, I've chosen the master, you put that out, don't issue anything else for whatever reason. I don't know why his preference was for take two on that, or why later it changed to take four, and why take three was rejected. Having heard the whole thing, it's as good and as marvelous a performance as anything else. And I was, of course, worried about handling it, the physical test pressing, and I dropped a note out to an intermediary who contacted Sony, asked them if they had it in inventory, and I got the reply back through a friend of mine. MTLS shows a metal part and a test pressing of this in our vaults, so tell your friend, me, it's okay if he accidentally sits on his pressing. Thank you. So, it's one of the, you know, one of those holy grail moments. Another one, I'm sure, for Lauren Schoenberg was the fulfillment of 20 years or more of searching and trying to get a hold of, or at least to listen to, the Bill Savory collection. And Lauren's announcement of that, his acquisition for the Jazz Museum in Harlem, it's a wonderful thing. It's going to add to our knowledge quite a bit. Goodman and hundreds and hundreds of hours of other material by other artists. I can't wait to see what comes about from that. From what I gather, much of, if not all of the Goodman-related material Russ Connor and Bill Savory had collaborated on the information about it and gotten it into Russ's last book, Wrapping It Up. So that's pretty well complete as far as I know. There may be some other surprises I don't know about. But imagine my delight in hearing that, and imagine my chagrin at not being able to write about it because my book was in production that month. One of the things that Lauren did tell me about was for years, ever since it's been issued, nobody knew the date of the tune Roll 'em that's in the Columbia Air Checks album, SL-180 and all the subsidiary issues from there. The best guess at one time was February 15th, 1938. Later on, the best anybody could come up with sometime, perhaps February 1938. Lauren emailed me and said, we pinned it down October 19th, 1937. It was in the middle of a camel caravan program. And it's one of those complete programs that Russ Connor did not get from the R.J. Reynolds Corporation. There may not be a complete transcription of that broadcast. But now we know that that ultimate swing recording, we've got the date for it. And Roll 'em stayed in Goodman's book for quite a while, and one of the most eyebrow-raising performances I ever heard was this next one from December 4th, 1942. Cut 9, if you would, please. Thunk, a Peggy Lee vocal on Roll 'em. I'm going to skip ahead a bit. I won't be able to touch any of the classical material, the bop material, but another one of these holy grail things was to find a broadcast that hadn't been known to exist before, and as the abstract will say, again, while my book was in production, somebody came across the first 10 minutes of the July 16th, 1936 CBS broadcast from the Palomar Ballroom. Location Palomar recordings, there aren't too many of them. There's the one from 1935, there's a couple excerpts from 1937, and he was there each year between 35 and 37. But here's one from July 1936. The tape came to my attention first, and then, jaw-droppingly to me, 9 months later on eBay, the other two discs that were the balance of the broadcast turned up, and I was able to get a hold of those. Cut 14, if you would, please. Thank you. arrangement was still in evolution at that point. That's the only time I've ever heard that kind of ending on it. And how much poorer we'd be without that little intermediate, or without all these other things that have come to light. I suppose if there's a core idea of philosophy behind my writing about Goodman, it's that the work left behind is what's important. The external pressures, the economic necessity, the personality conflicts, and the like, they may shape the end result, but that's the limit of my interest in all the stories about Benny's behavior toward others. The work defines the man and the reputation left behind. And for that reason, I think it's important to gather everything possible that documents that work, no matter its format, quality, or preserved condition, and to make available information about that and as clear and as accurate as possible. And whether I succeed or fail, that's the perspective I bring to bear on Benny Goodman, working from my start with cutouts and Salvation Army discs to what I've been privileged to be able to listen to or handle. That's where we are today. And I'd like to thank very much Mr. David Lewis, who brought out that, who brokered that particular set of discs, Elliot Foreman, Carl Pearson, who made available to me some portions of their collections and allowed you to hear them today, and most especially Susan Satz and the estate of Benny Goodman.
Okay. thank you, David. We're going to hold questions to the very end. We're going to keep this thing rolling. And but I think I should just say one thing, David. He might have given Edgar Sampson credit for that stomping at the Savoy, but I think Benny's name is on the sheet music. Making sure he's getting his money. Don't worry about that. All right. Anyway.